Hi, everybody. You tuned into the Heritage Radio Network. The show is Flash Talks Cash. We're about money, making it, spending it, saving it, what to do with it when you get it. I'm your host, Joanne Flash Fleming, and I'm here with my co-host, Andrew, my son, Newman. He's here.
Thank you, Jack. Thank
He's
you, Jack.
He's here. He made his presentation today.
We have a special treat today. I'm going to read the sponsor.
Okay.
Hearst Ranch is the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. Since 1865, the Hearst family has raised cattle on the rich, sustainable, native grasslands of the central California coast. The result... See, I don't need that. The result is beef with extraordinary flavor that is memorable and natural as the surrounding landscape. For more information, go to www.hearstranch.com.
Ah, Andrew read aloud today.
See, like, I don't need that.
I didn't do anything.
You did a... Jack.
And my engineer and my producer, Jack Inslee, is here. Hello, Jack.
Hey.
And we broadcast live every Thursday from 4:30 to 5. If you can't listen to us live while we're streaming, all shows are archived on the website, or you can download a free podcast via iTunes. Call in anytime during the show. We'd love to hear from you. You can call us at
718-497-2128.
497-2128. Or you can email... Jack will take your emails, info@heritageradionetwork.com, and we'll read your emails online, I mean out loud, and and we'll chat with you, however form you want to send it.
I can't lie, I actually somewhat memorized that advertisement from the multiple times you've read it, so it came like, it was like kind of in the back
easy.
Of my mind. You know?
It was as easy as it gets for
I
you.
I was impressed.
Thank you, Jack.
Yay.
I thought it for psh, in the Andrew, middle of it, that was, I thought I
really,
did pretty good.
I didn't.
You did. There was a definitive psh. I even heard it through my headphones.
You probably
I saw your face
guilt.
Too cringing. It was pretty awful.
Can we talk about the show and our guest today?
I can't wait to get to him.
Okay. We have a special guest today. His name is Tim Fisher. He's an attorney from Manhattan. Say hi, Tim.
Hello. How are you?
Okay. And Tim is here to talk about our show, Tax Planning for the End. And Tim is going to talk to us about, I guess, wills and estates
and dying.
It's
a great thing you brought that up. You know, the world
the
is
end.
Ending this Saturday.
Yeah, May 21st is the end.
Everyone?
So do we need to do tax planning? I'm wondering.
I wouldn't pay a lawyer to plan for the next 2 days. If you plan on living longer than that, it's a different matter.
Okay, so Tim says Saturday is either it's in place or don't bother. It's a little too late. So what do we think about the end being this Saturday, May 21st? Are we buying it?
Yeah, that's why I'm still here.
That's why
I showed up here to do our last episode.
This could be the
everyone can hear
according
us.
According to the... Who is the guy, the evangelist or the Christian guy who's actually selling? Does anybody know who it is?
I have
is?
No idea.
I don't know.
Jack?
No, nobody
not
knows.
Me.
Nobody
no.
knows. So, and then if we make it through... Some of us will not die. They have some caveats here. They have some holes here. So not everybody's going to
yeah,
die
if you give
on
them
Saturday.
Money, I'm sure you'll be a lot. You'll be,
so,
you'll
but
be
you'll
saved.
Be redeemed if you're the good Christian, right?
Actually, I think the people who are... good enough to get us to ascend to heaven don't die, and the rest of the people don't die. They continue to live in a degraded world.
Which is, that's all very subjective, right? Who could say what's degraded? Some people's degraded world could be somebody's
I thought
heaven.
That was my normal life. I don't know.
Yeah, you know. And then what the people who are saved, they get like, what do they get? They get lots of money or they have
whatever
lots
makes
of happiness.
You happy. I don't know.
Well, that depends
on
your definition.
This is all subjective. How does this help us
heaven,
with financial
right.
planning?
Well, we're going to talk about if you make it past Saturday. We're going to talk about what you should do come Sunday to deal with your life and your death taxes.
Right. And can you take it with you?
You can't take it with you.
No.
I don't think. I think the Egyptians tried that. It didn't really work, right? They raided the graves. They raided the tombs. Okay, so we're talking about estate taxes, and we're going to break it down into various stages of life.
Is it just the taxes, or do you plan for...
Oh, planning, estate planning.
It's planning
it's really
and
estate planning.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, estate
okay.
Taxes are part of it.
Taxes,
yeah.
Lots of people don't pay estate taxes, mm-hmm. especially if you're a brokester. And some of our audience may not have enough money to qualify to pay estate taxes, and then some of them may. But we're going to talk about what you can do during your lifetime to avoid... the overpaying of taxes.
I'm very interested.
Yeah. So we're going to start now. You know, you're a kid. You don't have any issues. You get to be 18. Now you're legal. Okay, we're legal. At 18, actually, there's very little tax planning.
What are you talking? 18? I didn't have a job at 18. Right. Like, let's move forward here.
You don't have anything really that you have to worry about. So you hit the 20s. Tim, tell us some of the things that 20-year-olds encounter, and they probably don't even know what they're encountering and could be an estate or a will or a legal issue regarding their money.
Well, for most people, they don't really obtain much value or wealth until they have a job where they have benefits provided by the job, maybe a group term life insurance, 401k plan.
Right.
Maybe they put some money in the bank to save up to buy a co-op or a condo in New
right.
York or
so
a house.
So in their 20s, right.
In yep. their 20s.
Yep.
Now, under New York state law, if somebody's single, has no wife or children, and dies without a will, all of his benefits, all of the money he owns, the assets he owns directly, go to his mother or father, or the two of them.
Yeah.
And if his mother and father are predeceased, it gets inherited by his brothers and sisters
right.
or their children, his nieces and nephews.
Right.
And there's a bigger expansion into cousins and
right.
second cousins.
Right.
So you don't necessarily need a will if you say mom and dad are fine and they're
right.
alive.
Right.
But even if you don't provide a will, you also have these other benefits like the group life insurance and
yeah.
the 401k plan,
yeah.
which have beneficiary designations.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't fill out your own beneficiary designation, then it goes not according to New York state law, but according to the plan or the insurance product
right.
or the IRA
the
contract.
The mutual fund company or somebody.
Right. Usually it follows the same way, but it doesn't necessarily. It may say to your spouse and then children and then to your estate. Instead of, but it doesn't necessarily say to your brothers and sisters
okay.
or things of that nature.
So the thing to do is to fill it in with whoever your primary beneficiary is.
Whoever you want to have your money
yeah.
when you pass away.
And if somebody, if your beneficiary dies or you no longer speak to them, you really have to be on top of it and make those changes.
Yeah, not only that, but some of these benefits have income tax consequences as
yes,
well as estate
right.
tax consequences. And if you're parents are well off, you don't necessarily want them to inherit. You'd rather have your brother or sister who's
right.
barely making it
right.
Somewhere in,
right.
In the Middle West, let's
right.
say,
right.
Inherit some money, and they'll appreciate it, and they're in a lower income tax bracket, and if your parents are fortunate enough to have estate tax problems, it won't be included in their estate.
Right. Mm-hmm. So you really have to think about this, and you have to be on top of it. So you have to look at it every few years
so
and
who
change,
you want money.
Especially as your life changes. And your life changes a lot in your 20s.
And the beneficiary's life changes as well.
Right. So now that's pretty much an IRA account and a death benefit if
yeah.
you have
yeah.
a job.
And if you have a bank account or even a securities account, you can name a beneficiary.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And if most of your assets are going according to beneficiary designations,
yes.
then it's not that needed to have a will.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Although it's not a bad thing. I got to promote it. That's part of my living.
Yeah, but most 20-year-olds don't need a will.
Yeah, I don't have a will.
No,
don't think.
21. Okay, so it's kind of simple, and you have to fill that form and don't forget it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, most people forget they filled in that form.
Not only that, I always suggest that when you fill out a beneficiary form, you get a copy, and then you have the person to whom you've given it to you acknowledge receipt.
Yeah, mm-hmm. that's a good idea. So they know it's coming. In case something happens to you, they know to come out and ask for it. That's a great idea.
I told Tosh.
Oh,
I was like, yo,
good.
You're my beneficiary.
No,
I don't think I'm her beneficiary. I'm nobody.
No.
Can I be your beneficiary?
You're my beneficiary.
Oh, you're a liar.
No, it's true.
I know you have a will.
I do, and you're my beneficiary. So now let's assume you're now in your 30s, and life is marching on. Let's take a couple of scenarios.
I was going to say, what point do you start telling people to like look into a will or estate planning and stuff like that? What are the steps that you need to, like, the goals you achieve, and then you're like, all right, you should sit down and start planning ahead?
Well, I think once you have significant assets, or you're married, or you have children, or you have somebody who's dependent on you that you have a moral obligation to provide for their benefits and mm-hmm. support after you're dead, that's those situations I think it's important for you to have a will. Remember, wills don't benefit the person who writes one.
Oh.
You prepare a will or a beneficiary designation to satisfy moral obligations, taking care of your minor children or your spouse, if your spouse was relying on your income, or to make people feel good. Leaving money for somebody almost always makes them feel good.
Yeah.
And I look at wills in that way. It's satisfy your moral obligations and make people feel good.
Okay. So now you're in your 30s, and let's assume you got married. Because there's two scenarios. You either get married or you don't get married. Mm-hmm. So let's assume you got married, and now you're buying... Now, this is pretty typical what happens to people in their 30s.
How about this? I have a friend. Just got married last year. Baby on the way.
Right.
Just bought a house.
Right. Typical 30-something.
Does he have an insurance policy, by the way?
On his house? Or
no, life insurance.
I do not know.
All right. Number one is... He wants to make sure his wife inherits everything. Mm-hmm. He has a minor child. If you don't have a will, anything that's not in joint name or doesn't have a beneficiary designation will be divided between his wife and his minor child. And that's not a good thing. Mm-hmm. You don't want, supposing he was worth, say, $700,000. Mm-hmm. The first $50,000 goes to his wife, and then the rest gets divided between his wife and his child. And the money that goes to his child gets put into a guardianship account under the supervision of the court.
Oh, really?
Yes. Yeah. Most people would want everything to go to your surviving spouse, right, who will take care of your child,
right,
and have total discretion over,
right,
the matter.
Because that kid's going to inherit that account when, right, he's 21, so, and go and blow it on a Jaguar.
Well, what happens with the account? Do they like invest it, or is it just in like a money market account?
No, you can invest it.
The state-owned custodial account.
No, it's not state-owned. It's not state-owned. It's set up as a guardian account.
It's court-appointed and supervised.
Right.
Okay.
It's not the same thing as giving it to your wife or husband, who will do what he or she thinks is best for the family,
right,
or putting it in a trust for your child, mm-hmm, and naming a trustee who's your best friend or, mm-hmm, or your respected
brother, right,
professional,
right, right,
or your, mm-hmm, brother-in-law,
mm-hmm,
who can do whatever he thinks is best for your child. It's much more restrictive. So, and you also have to spend money on these kind of things from, uh-huh, time to time. So you're best off once you get married, You might have a child, even if you die before you have a child. It's called infant sans mère.
Uh-huh.
You die with your wife pregnant.
Uh-huh.
And that child has certain rights as well. So you're best off anticipating the possibility, writing a will when you get married, making sure, if this is your goal, is for your spouse to inherit everything.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's pretty typical.
Yes, and that is typical.
Right.
But more important than the will is you have a life insurance policy. Mm-hmm. Well, the will's critical. You also have a life insurance policy. The life insurance policy should name your spouse, and then I recommend it names your estate, because if you have a will, you've written a trust for your child, saying, oh, until my child's 21, the trustee makes decisions. After 21, the child gets the income. At 25, he gets half. 30, mm-hmm, gets the balance. And the trustees can spend money for college education, buying a house, wedding, and things of that nature.
It's a way to control from the grave.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. But right. I don't believe in long-term control.
Right,
I try to, you know, 30 years old is usually plenty.
Yeah.
But if you, most people, without thinking about it, name their spouse as the first beneficiary of
their kids second.
And then their minor children second.
Right, that's a bad move.
And then you get back into this guardianship issue instead of giving it to the trustee. So I always recommend just pay it to the estate. Mm-hmm. My wife, my estate.
Okay, now let's take another scenario of a 30-something-year-old who's working professionally, accumulating assets, not married, has now bought himself a condo or a house, has some assets in the bank. What does he do as far as his estate issues?
Well, his estate issues are not that different. And until you get a substantial amount of assets, and I mean,
well, I'm saying he's making money now.
If he's making money.
Right, he's making money. He's 30-something. He's never had, he doesn't have a wife, so he's accumulating money.
If he does have a wife,
right,
he's accumulated money.
Right.
Then he's more concerned about it just going to mom or dad.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It might go to mom or dad. I mean, maybe his parents worked hard but never accumulated much,
right,
and that's the best thing that could happen to,
right,
them. On the other hand, if they're doing very well,
yeah,
the assets he has fall into several categories.
Yeah.
One is cash in the bank, one,
yeah,
is stocks and securities,
yep,
one's his condo,
mm-hmm,
another one's his 401k or his IRA,
mm-hmm,
another one he has group term life insurance if he has a good job.
Mm-hmm.
He may have bought life insurance on his own, but
mm-hmm,
whether it's term or whole life. Each one of these, he should consider naming a beneficiary.
Right.
Not necessarily to avoid probate, But to focus the assets. Not only that, but some of those assets, the IRA, the 401k,
yeah,
maybe deferred compensation,
yeah,
plan if he's doing very well, he's,
mm-hmm,
an executive, they all have income tax consequences, because whoever is the beneficiary will pay income tax on the money as it's paid out to them.
Okay.
So if you have a, supposing that he really wants to help out his college, you know, he's invested in his college, he goes back every year.
Alumni kind of.
Strong alumni.
Yeah.
And so if he has assets and he wants to give some money to the college, and he came in and talked to me, I would recommend he name the college a beneficiary of his IRA or pension or
401k
because the college won't pay income tax.
Mm-hmm.
And so by giving that to the college, you have actually have increased the after-tax value of the total benefits you're providing to your college and your loved ones.
Very nice. Okay, Tim, we hit the 30s. We're going to head to the 40s, but we're going to have to take a minute break, and we'll come back and finish up the 40s, the 50s, and the rest of things. Okay?
Paid my income tax today. I'm only one of millions more whose income never was taxed before. A tax I'm very glad to pay. I'm squared up with the USA. You see those bombers in the sky? Rockefeller helped to build them, so did I. I paid my income tax today.
I paid my income tax today. I'm only one of a million more whose income never was taxed before.
The following is a public service announcement from Heritage Radio Network. Tune in to Greenhorn Radio, hosted by Severin von Scharner Fleming, every Thursday at 2 p.m. Greenhorn Radio is radio for young farmers by young farmers. Helmed by acclaimed activist, farmer, and documentarian Severin Fleming, Greenhorn Radio is a weekly phone interview session surveying America's cutting-edge under 40 farmers. Again, that's every Thursday at 2 p.m. on the Heritage Radio Network.
Okay, we're back. Flash Talks Cash. We're talking about the ends. How to tax plan for the ends. We decided that we're going to make it past Saturday.
Can I ask a couple questions before we hit the 40s?
Okay, I want to just say who we're talking to.
Oh.
The esteemed Tim Fisher, who's going to give us a little contact info regarding his law firm. So, Tim, tell us the details on that.
Yeah, hi. I'm a sole practitioner. I work for myself. I'm on Madison Avenue between, I'm on 40th Street between Madison Avenue and 5th Avenue. I have a great view of the public library.
Oh.
And if you have a question, you can contact me by just sending an email, or if you have a lot of questions, it's tfisher at tfisherlaw.com, T-F-I-S-H-E-R at T-F-I-S-H-E-R-L-A-W.com. Thank you.
Okay.
L-E-W?
L-A-W.
Oh, you
L-A-W.
Said
L-A-W. No, he said L-A-W. Okay, so
I have a lot of questions.
I just want to make sure that everybody knows that we got the esteemed Tim Fisher giving us all this free advice today regarding the ends.
I might have to email him after the show for more questions.
And Andrew has a couple of questions. He asked him on the during the break, but we said hold the questions till now. So now Andrew's got real questions.
So what is probate?
All right. When you die, you either are what they call testate or intestate. Testate means you died with a will. Now, a will doesn't have any legal consequence until the court says it does. The process of the court determining that the will is valid is called probate, which sounds like to prove, which is the source of the term.
Okay. And so if you don't have a will, there is no probate?
If you don't have a will and you need the court to supervise your assets because they don't have beneficiary designations, that process is in New York State called administration. It's similar to probate. You don't have to prove the will because you don't have a will, but you must, whoever is going to be your administrator has to show that he or she is entitled under law to have that status.
So does the will speed up the process? Does probate like drag on longer than this administrative, or is probate quicker than administrative?
You're much better off dying with a will than without a will.
It's easier. It's neater to die with a will, and there's a lot of important benefits of having a will. We went over some of them, but if you died without a will, and you know the people who survive, you know who your beneficiaries, you know who your family is, and get in touch with them and get jurisdiction over them, it's a very similar process.
My next question was, you said there's a trust, like naming your trust as like a beneficiary on your will or something. Could you set up a trust prior to the death and then name them as your beneficiary so that then you can then manage it in one larger pool rather than naming like my sister as a beneficiary in this, my mother is a beneficiary in this, like my cousin who I want to give some money as a...
It's a really good question. There's a lot of information about trust. First of all, we were talking about setting up a will, and in a will you can write a trust provisions so that once you probate the will, the probate of the will creates the trust. Mm-hmm. So, for example, you can say, and I give the balance of my estate to my trustees to hold for the benefit of my child, mm-hmm. under the following terms and conditions, and write how you want your trustees to provide for your child. You'll name your trustees, mm-hmm. and that's the way things will run. Now, you can also write a trust while you're alive, and as a matter of fact, it's called a living trust, or the Latin is inter vivos, among mm-hmm. the living trust. And people do those for more specific reasons. Writing it in a will is standard, and you know, it just costs you the cost of writing a will. Mm-hmm. Writing a trust is an additional action, and you usually have a reason for it. Mm-hmm. One reason is estate planning, tax planning. Mm-hmm. Another is to hold a life insurance trust, which is part of estate tax planning. Another one is if you're old or ailing, and you may want to make sure that if you're not able to handle something, you've had very explicit rules of who should handle it and how they should handle it, and you can set up a trust for that. It's called usually called a revocable trust. Mm-hmm. Revocable meaning you can amend it, terminate it, cancel it, get your mm-hmm. money back. Another benefit of a revocable trust is when you don't know who your family members are. We recently had a woman come in to write a will, and then it turned out that she was married a long time ago. She hadn't seen her husband in about 30 years. She hates him. She never wants to know about him. And to probate her will, since she never formally got divorced, would mean we would have to try to track him down.
Right. I look at Arnold Schwarzenegger. He has another family member that he has to deal with now in his estate, right?
Yes. And in fact, one of the advantages of using a trust is privacy.
Yeah.
Supposing that Mr. Schwarzenegger wanted to provide for this child. Obviously, he was providing for him already, and he was keeping it secret. If he kept it secret forever, he might have put away money in a trust mm-hmm. so that his family would not be embarrassed mm-hmm. when you have a public will that's saying, I have an illegal, mm-hmm. illegitimate child.
So now, mostly, and this is just a general sweeping statement, most people don't need to have trust. Those are generally for people who have some sort of good assets, a good amount of money, or very specific reasons. But the average Joe can go through life without having a trust.
The exception for that is certain states. It's either the form of practice of law, or probate is very complex. You know, Florida, California, Connecticut, also in your states that are community property states, most of the states in the West that have Spanish origins, mm-hmm. there's a state and income tax reasons for using trusts as part of your normal estate planning, but not here in the East for the most part.
Just know that when you set up a trust, you also have an additional tax filing annually in addition to your income tax return. But let's move on. So you touched on a few things that happen when you're in your 40s, your 50s, 60s. Let's assume you're 40-something years old. Let's assume if you're single, the situation hasn't changed much since your 30s. Your assets are still, you might have to update your beneficiaries if your parents are old or your sister or brother got married and you hate your in-laws. But let's assume you're in your 40s. You got kids growing up, you got a mortgage, you got a wife, you got some assets, you got college loans, you got college on the horizon. What do you do for estate tax planning
then? Well, one of the things I discuss with let's say a couple in that situation is I ask them to review their insurance. Now, I'm not an insurance broker,
right.
And I don't really give them commitments, but I talk to them about considering what the needs are in terms of how much money it takes for your children to go to college,
right,
the college you
right,
want,
right.
How much money they're going to need afterwards because you can't get a job in a recession.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And if one of the spouses has not had a regular job, you have a moral obligation to make sure to support
mm-hmm.
her
mm-hmm.
or him.
Yeah.
And then once you talk about insurance, the next question about insurance, because now we're talking about people who may have a fair amount of money depending mm-hmm. on their situation.
Yes.
They may have estate tax issues, and even more than earlier, and there are many ways to address estate tax issues if you have them. Now,
A big asset, by the way. Let me interrupt. A big asset when you're in your 40s and 50s is your home. Usually your home, especially if you're in New York City, you're an instant millionaire if you own a home in New York City.
There was an article today about Troy, Michigan, where the average home costs over $200,000, and that's considered to be a lot of money out there.
Yes.
But in New York, you can't buy a hovel.
You can't buy one bedroom for $200,000.
No.
I was going to say a nice-sized closet. But
yeah. Well, you're talking about Manhattan. I know Brooklyn and Queens, you can't even get a one bedroom for that much.
So in your 40s and your 50s, well, now you're 40s, so you get insurance. Make sure your insurance is up to date.
Make sure insurance. Now you start talking about trust as a state tax planner.
Mm-hmm.
So it gets more complicated, but you also have to consider that the fact you're older and your possibility of becoming disabled is greater, or dying, as they say, untimely. And there are other kinds of documents besides wills and trusts. There's powers of attorney.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
In case something happens to you, you don't want to have a court proceeding appoint a guardian. Right. It could be your wife or your mother or father, but it takes money and time, and there's emotional cost to that. Mm-hmm. So you can have a power of attorney to give somebody else the power to take care of your financial affairs if you're unable to do so.
Joanne, I want to be that. Next.
Additionally, there's something called a healthcare proxy, which gives somebody else...
I already have that one. Next question.
Somebody Let's else...
The audience doesn't know.
Ability to make medical decisions on your behalf, again, if you're unable to do so.
Right.
And then there's another document, which I call the HIPAA authorization document. The federal government, a number of years ago, adopted a very, very strict set of rules about medical information privacy. So if you want to make sure that somebody can act on your behalf and have access to your medical information, you need to
allow them
to do so. Right. Now your spouse automatically has that right. But rather than sit there and try to decide who has the right and who doesn't, you sign one of these HIPAA authorization documents. Additionally, by giving it to an institution, you avoid having them do their own analysis of who has the right to get.
And that's really important as you grow older, because you never know when you're going to get sick. So in your 40s and your 50s, now you're in your 50s, and we have now grandchildren are coming upon the scene. And you kids are married and going away. And so what are some of the things that you might have to do now that your kids are gone and you got grandkids coming up?
Well, interestingly enough, grandparents often want to start making gifts to their grandchildren.
Yep.
And they will usually give it to the parents to hold as guardians under the Uniform Transfer to Minors Act. The problem with doing that, if you plan on making a fair number of gifts, is that over time, the money can grow. And the next thing you know, your grandchild is 21, has the absolute right to get whatever money's in that account, and has the biggest pot party you can ever see.
Mm-hmm.
So the way to avoid that kind of a problem, and by the way, I've had clients who come in with custodial accounts with $750,000 for each of their three or four kids.
Not me.
Jesus.
None of them.
Where was that?
You weren't raised by a doctor.
Apparently not.
The children weren't even aware of it.
Right.
There were income tax consequences. And you know what they wanted? They wanted not to let the children know about the money, even though the children were in their 20s.
Right.
The way to do that, if you think you're going to have regular gifts for your grandchildren, is set up a trust.
Uh-huh.
You can name the parents to be the trustees.
Right.
You can give away the money and every year, and there'll be a bunch of rules in there, and the parents can abide by the rules and have the discretion.
But you can also put money away in their education fund.
Oh, 529 program is great. Besides being tax-free, as long as you use it for education, you can also change the beneficiaries.
Anytime.
And this is the one time that the contributor is allowed to have the right to make these changes, and it's still excluded from his estate. It's the only time I know.
And the contributor gets to get a tax deduction on the on New York State tax.
New York State does. Yes, up to $10,000 a year.
So we're now into our 60s and 70s. You touched on the healthcare proxy, the HIPAA thing, the trust, the wills. And pretty much things stay the same. You got to hope that the end isn't too soon. You're ready to go. You're not ready to go. Is there anything you got to tell us? Oh, well, there's that Medicare thing. Can you tell us in 1 minute what that Medicare thing is about when you're old?
Well, actually, there's a program everybody knows about, which is called Medicaid, which provides for persons actually who are indigent, who have very, very little assets and very, very little income, and they need to go into a nursing home.
There's a lot of retired people that are close to that, though.
Right. And so if you're wealthy you're not going to cause yourself to be indigent.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have it, if you are indigent, you're not going to cause yourself to be indigent. So you have this middle group of persons who have
more
than 100,000 and less than a million, let's say.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And the question is, what should I do?
Mm-hmm.
Now, personally, I'm very wary about advising a client to make himself or herself indigent.
Yeah.
I think people have a lot of pride and respect in taking care of their assets.
Right.
But if they are in this situation where they see that their money's going to be dissipated in a few years anyway, then they might consider making transfers to so that in 5 years, there's a five-year rule, so that in 5 years, they will qualify for Medicaid.
Otherwise, they're going to have to pay for their nursing home costs out of the money that they have accumulated in their lifetime.
And then they will go on Medicaid anyway.
Yes.
So the benefit is for the children, not for them.
That's right. So you saved all that money. You're going to pay for a nursing home, or you're going to give it away to your kids ahead of time and be outsmart the government. That's kind of what it is. Well, Tim, I want to...
Awesome. Some more old people on our budget.
Oh, yes.
This just gets me every time.
Yeah, Andrew loves old people and having to support them. So, Tim, I want to thank you for coming. That was great information.
I learned a lot.
It was wonderful to be here, and I appreciate the invitation.
We'll bring you back for another topic because you seem to have a lot of information for people and their money. So, again, Tim Fisher from Midtown Manhattan on 39th Street?
40th Street, 5th and Madison.
Right.
tfisher@tfisher.com. tfisherlaw.com.
Very
Talk
good.
Talk to you guys next week.
Bye-bye. Bye now.
I have a hurricane. Listen to yourself. Turn world serves its own needs. Dummy, serve your own needs. Feed it up an ox. Speak grunt. No strength.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.
This is behind the scenes food news with Katie Kiefer. I learned recently that the FDA is expanding on subtherapeutic antibiotic use. This came to me via the Food Safety News email blog or newsletter, however you want to call it. And I urge people to check this out. It's a great production. And this particular article informed me that the U.S. Food and Drug Administration has revealed new detail about how antibiotics are used in animal agriculture, an issue of growing controversy in food policy and public health circles. According to the FDA, approximately 74% of antibiotics given to food animals are administered subtherapeutically through feed and another 16% through water, with only 3% of antibiotics being administered through injections, which would imply the injections are when an animal is actually sick and the only time they really should be getting subtherapeutic or they should be getting any antibiotics. Subtherapeutic antibiotics, I also learned, are part of what helps animals convert food to fat or muscle faster, and which is why they're so popular in the animal ag sector. In a letter late last week, the FDA released this breakdown for the first time to Congresswoman Louise Slaughter, the Democrat from New York, and the only microbiologist serving in Congress who has taken the lead on curbing the use of antibiotics in agriculture to slow growing antibiotic resistance. Now, you can go on, and there's a lot of information out there about this. It's also worth recognizing that there are studies which say there is no transmission of antibiotics through animal tissue into human tissue through consumption. But I wasn't finding a whole lot of those studies, and I was finding an awful lot of studies that were saying the reverse. So though the jury is out on the use of subtherapeutic antibiotics, I think we can expect to hear a lot more controversy, and I think everyone should raise their voice in concern. And it's a great example of know your farmer, know your food, know where you're getting your chow. That's it for today with Behind the Scenes Food News with Katie Kiefer.
Did you know we have a cocktail show? Check out a clip from the speakeasy.
So it's kind of crazy. Over the last, like, I would say, like, 10 or so years, Irish whiskey's really made a huge comeback. I mean, it's always been big because of the fact that it's mostly blended and easier to drink. And especially like Jameson, obviously Bushmills, they've been doing really hardcore marketing pushes for those two over the past decade.
At least. And there's no peat. Right. Which I think makes it a little bit more acceptable to sort of anybody between the ages of 16 and, 25 who's learning to drink whiskey. It's like...
Yeah. It's like whiskey... I don't want to offend any Irishmen out there, but it's almost like an introductory whiskey, and it's almost a whiskey for people who don't normally drink whiskey.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. Not to say that all James.
If you like what you heard, like the Speakeasy airs every Wednesday at 3 p.m. on the Heritage Radio Network. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast or check out the archives on our website.